This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on February 11th, 2016. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The draft that we are waiting on relates to the second item on our agenda today, the draft advisory opinion 2015-14, Hillary for America. And so I would recommend that we switch up the order here and that we consider draft advisory opinion 2015-16, Niger Innards for Congress, first. And then as we get the drafts, we can then come back to the Hillary for America advisory opinion. I apologize for fouling up your plans, but stick around and we will get to that advisory opinion soon. So without objection, we will turn to Niger Innards for Congress. And Mr. Backer is here on behalf of the requester, and please take a seat at the table. We have Ms. Selenkoff and Mr. Knopf from the Office of General Counsel ably handling this advisory opinion. And Ms. Selenkoff, good morning.
You. Chair Peterson, good morning, Commissioners. Agenda documents 1607 A and B present two draft advisory opinions in response to a request by Innes for Congress. Mr. Innes was a candidate in 2014. He lost the primary election, and his committee now asks two questions about contributions for the general election in which Mr. Innes did not participate that it received prior to the primary election loss. First, the committee asks whether it may pay legal, accounting, compliance, and transaction costs that it traces to the general election contributions from those contributions. Both drafts conclude that it may not. Second, the committee asks whether it may donate to charity those general election contributions it has been unable to refund. Draft A concludes the committee may not, and Draft B concludes the committee may donate those amounts to charity. The commission received one comment from the requester, and I'm available to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Selenkoff. Is there any discussion or questions for requester? Mr. Vice Chairman.
Mr. Backer, do you have any, are you still pursuing the issue of whether or not those costs can be recovered?
The part that's covered under question one?
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
Okay. Well, let me ask you some questions. And you say these are unique costs.
Mm-hmm.
But the list that I see is they consist of transaction-specific costs. Are we talking about four people?
Yes.
Okay. And so these unique costs are devoted only to expenses incurred with respect to those four people?
Yes, because all the other ones have been refunded.
Okay.
But as a general precept, it sort of would have broader application.
What?
I would suggest that if that there's broader application here, that if it works for these four people in this situation, it should probably work in general for anybody else.
Right,
but we're only asking about for these four transactions.
That this is a precursor to a future policy whereby all of these expenses can be picked up and there wouldn't be a full refund.
I would suggest so, but we're only asking about these four specific transaction costs.
But let's talk about this. What we're basically asking is for the people who are entitled to full refund to pay these costs,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Okay. And so the check processing fees in this case was how much for the four?
I don't know the answer to the specific per transaction costs on each of these individually.
How about the transfer fees?
Approximately, and I'd have to go back and look, but it's between 3.5% and 4.5% depending on what kind of credit card the actual transaction was processed on.
Okay, so there was what happened in this case?
So there's credit card transactions that are made, or the check transactions are a separate question, but there's credit card transactions that are made, and each individual transaction has a per-transaction processing cost charged by the credit card vendor. And so there's a percentage of fees plus, and it varies slightly based on whether it's a Visa, MasterCard, or an Amex, or Discover. And so each individual transaction made by credit card has a unique transaction processing cost that we would argue should not be refunded because it's already been spent. And then separately, that's sort of the major component of it. And the second part was fundraisers who are compensated for the solicitation of these general election fees or paid for the successful solicitation, that percentage should be deducted as well. And in that case, it's I'd have to double check, but I'm pretty sure this was a fundraiser was making either 10 or 15%, and I think it's 10% for this fundraiser.
So, and then we'll go back to that. Is there a bounce check fee here?
Not on these transactions that I'm aware of, but we kind of wanted to be inclusive of it, just in case we miss some transactional items.
Okay, but you're only talking about four people. Were there any bounce checks?
On these four, there aren't any bounce checks.
So what would be the purpose of asking for it with this AO?
We wanted to be inclusive of the kind of transactions that we think ought to be permissible, even if it's not specifically permissible to these four. If it happens, we wanted to have that as sort of part of the answer.
But we don't have a true legal issue here.
With respect to the bounce check fees, probably not.
Okay.
But again, I think as you noted, there's broader implications to the outcome on this question.
Then, yes. And the fundraising commissions, in connection with these matters, where each of the four contributors had a deduction to the commission or to the campaign because there was a commission paid?
Yes. So there is a payment made to the fundraiser on the solicitation of the successful solicitation of these fees. Those funds came out of the primary contribution, or the amount of the primary contribution, as opposed to the specific general election funds.
And how much of those do you know?
10%. I'm almost certain it's 10%. There was at one point a separate piece that was 15%, but I think these are within the 10% bucket.
And were the four contributors contributing equal amounts?
No, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but there were four different contributions. I think one was $2,600, one was $1,000 or $2,000, one was $1,400. It was different amounts.
And then why do you say these are unique? Does it make a difference in the analysis?
Yes. I think when you have when I say unique, I mean in terms, it's unique to that specific individual contribution. So it's not, for example, so we know for a fact that this $1,000 contribution has a credit card processing cost of $15.32 because we can look at a specific credit card bill and find that transaction. We know it has that individual contribution of $1,000 related to caused a $100 transaction processing fee, a fundraising fee. And so it's unique to that individual transaction. I can imagine that there are plenty of fees that might be assessed to a campaign that are not specific to a contribution. So, for example, if a fundraiser gets a bonus for raising $100,000, even if it includes general election funds, that bonus wouldn't be tied to a specific general election contribution. It's to a general course of performance. And I think there's a lot of activity that might fall within that non-specific, non-unique category, but there are transactions that occur purely because it's a general election contribution and it's specific to one particular general election contribution only.
And that applied in these four cases?
Yes.
Okay. Did any of these donors give any money to the primary?
Yes, all of them did.
Each of them did. Now, the transfer fees, tell me about what happened with respect to these four donors.
I'm not sure what you mean, what transfer fees we're talking about. So I think there might have been
you're talking about them in the sense that you confirm that those are items confirming a telephone conversation you had with our office. Hmm. Not our office, the Walther office, but the down in the RAD, I assume, or some, I'm not sure, OGC.
I'm not entirely sure which fees we're referring to when we say the transfer fees, but generally it's the cost of the solicitation of the successful solicitation of the contribution. There's the cost of the processing of the contribution by a credit card. To the extent that there would be a transfer fee, a cost of transition, taking that amount of money that's going in and moving it from one account to another, that might be a transfer fee. I'm not entirely sure, looking back, what specific piece of it we're discussing. But again, we're only interested in the fees that are specific to the individual contributions that are traceable to this, to these individual contributions. So there might be, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Maybe somebody, we had a FedEx a check. That would be a transfer fee, I would imagine. So if we had a FedEx one specific check and we're paying for that, arguably that might be a fee. If we're FedExing two checks, it wouldn't be uniquely traceable to that one contribution. But again, I'm not entirely sure what specifically we talked about transfer fees.
Okay, so this is unclear. Check processing fees?
Right.
Either a check or a credit card. Which ones are we talking about here?
Credit card processing fees, to the extent there might have been ACH processing fees, which are the drafting of when money automatically goes from one bank account to another, those are separate kinds of processes. They're essentially the same nature as a credit card processing fee, but they're just ACH fees as opposed to credit card fees.
And so were there check processing fees with respect to these four?
I don't believe so. I believe these were all credit card processing.
So would that be you say account maintenance fees, check processing fees, transfer fees, bounce check fees, and fundraising commissions. So which ones apply to this case?
To these specific four transactions, credit card processing fees, fundraising commissions.
That is not listed.
The credit card processing fees?
Yeah.
I think that would be probably the processing fees writ large, because it would processing fees would relate to both credit cards or ACH transactions.
Okay. All right, so which ones are we actually talking about then?
The credit card processing fees, which are part of the processing fee category, the fundraising fees that are related to the each individual contribution being raised. I don't believe in this specific case there were any bounce check related fees. I'd have to double check, but I don't think that was the case. I know we've had that client had checks that bounce and caused a fee. And of course, legal, accounting, and compliance costs generally. Bank maintenance fees, that relates to the existence of the bank account, solely that the fact that account exists, there's a fee that was assessed for that.
For a checking account?
Yeah, just for the existence of this checking account. We're talking a very modest amount of money, but it's only existing for, in the sense of like it's a couple of dollars.
But those aren't unique, are they?
They're not uniquely traceable to these transactions, but they are uniquely traceable to only to the existence of the general election account. And so, again, while we think there are specific transactions here, but there's potentially broader implications, and we wanted to be inclusive rather than over-inclusive rather than under-inclusive.
Well, when you go to write a check, how are you going to make a deduction to these four people?
I'm sorry, what?
I gather the exact amount of $8,000 that these people are entitled to refund, less whatever we say can be deducted. Is that correct?
Yes. The goal is to anything that could be deducted would then be, in effect, transferred from the general to the primary account where those funds were originally paid out of, and then the balance would, pursuant to our request under question two, would be then donated to a charity.
I may come back to that, but let me ask you this in connection with the efforts to obtain a refund.
I'm sorry,
what efforts were made to obtain a refund?
To make the refunds, first we issued a check to the contributors. Those checks were not the cash or deposited, and then we made phone calls. Either the compliance team or the campaign team called the individual donors, and then there was a second issuing of the checks. The donors are not responsive, and to be honest, I'm not entirely sure why. If somebody sent me a couple $1,000 check, I'd be pretty quick to deposit it. But for whatever reason, these amounts have been mailed out to them twice. They've not responded to them. They've not bounced back to us through the USPS system. So somebody's getting this mail and just not processing it on the individual donor side. To be honest, it was a very surprising thing. I really didn't expect this to happen. I have another client that this occurred with, and in talking to my peers in the service side of the industry, this apparently happens every now and again. Any committee that raises any amount of money seems to have donors, and where they have to make refunds for the general, they have donors that just don't deposit refund checks.
Well, you've got their address, right?
Yeah, and we've sent checks to them by mail.
The same address that they used for when they made their first contribution?
Yes, I would.
Primary, and those checks went through.
It would have been mailed to the address that we had that they would have given us when they're completing the donor information for us to perform our best efforts compliance. So that would have been the address that we would have mailed it to. And I'm pretty sure on all of these, we actually asked for, has there been any change in the address? Are you aware of anything to the local people in Nevada? No one was aware of any change of address. I find it really weird, to be honest with you, that they're getting checks and they're not depositing it. On the other hand, people who cut $2,700 or $2,600 checks probably have a different set of concerns than I do. So,
but if you go spend the money for returning it to charity or to the government and they go to cash the check, they won't have any money to...
We will, of course, cancel the checks. Those checks are now stale dated anyway. They're more than 90 days old. And so we haven't canceled them to date, but we probably would before we donated the balance of the charity.
So they'd lose their opportunity for a refund?
Yes, to the extent that they've sat on that opportunity for almost 2 years now.
Okay.
In fairness, about a year and a half. I think the primary was in May of 2014, so it's slightly less than 2 years.
Well, then, if you've got $8,000 and there's only four people, couldn't somebody pick up the phone? I mean, you're the treasurer, am I correct?
Yes.
I mean, I didn't realize that when I read your AO. I just learned that this morning. But you're the treasurer.
Yes.
So you're in charge of all this money?
Yes.
Okay.
And phone calls have been made to each of these donors unsuccessfully.
By you?
No, by the campaign staff, by the candidate himself, by the fundraiser that was involved. They weren't able to get a hold of anybody.
Could they pick? Nobody picked up the phone on all those four of them?
Apparently not. And again, you know, the voicemails, I'm told voicemails were left. It's weird. I don't really understand why people aren't depositing, taking these checks that we're sending to them. And by all indication, the addresses are correct. Short of showing up on their doorsteps with a bundle of cash, we're not really sure what we could do. And I'm pretty sure that would violate a separate reg about petty cash.
So what possible legal theory do you have that these people there should be a deduction from whatever they're entitled to in the way of a refund? Because I assume what you do is send them a check for the full amount.
I'm sorry, what?
Did you send them a check for the full amount?
If they were going to cash it?
Two checks are ready to each of them.
Yeah, we would. Well, setting aside the request, we sent them checks for the full amount. If were you to agree with our legal theory on this, then we would, I guess we would again send them a check for the discounted amount. Though, again, if you also agree with our request in part two of this, we would deduct the fee amount and then just donate the rest of the charity. But so I guess it depends whether you agree with section two or not. But if you agree with one and not two, we would issue a new check for the difference between the amount that they contributed and the fees that were paid for that contribution. And then if you agreed with part two, we're going to skip that step because they clearly don't care and they've twice ignored us. So
in the future, do you give a full refund and thus you don't catch it, and then if they ask for it, you only give them partial refund? Or in the future, will you be deducting any time there's a refund, no matter how much, $100,000, $200,000 to 50 or 100 people or more, there'll be a unique cost deduction all the way through before they get the full refund? Is that what you're going to do?
Yes, I would say that under the theory under part one, the processing cost of contributions, well, frankly, a committee would have that choice. They could choose to just make a full refund, and I can see a lot of situations where the candidates are going to do that anyway because it's a good business practice in the sense of if you're running for office, you're soliciting contributions, you want to keep your donors happy, and you might run again. So I think a lot of people will still choose to fully refund to the extent they're able to. I also think, however, that campaigns are going to be well advised to deduct the amount of the processing fees that they're being assessed for these general election contributions and spend those funds on the general election on those costs, or at a minimum put them aside somewhere to make that determination later. But I would suggest that the processing fees and the fundraising costs should be paid out, and that at the committee's discretion they should be able to make a refund of the rest of the contribution less those uniquely traceable costs.
Okay, so we're really talking about a whole new process for everybody.
I don't know how new it necessarily is. I think from an accounting perspective, it's a pretty straightforward project or process from the Treasury side. You know you have a contribution and it's going to the general. You know how much the credit card cost of that is because we get the bank statements, and you know what you're paying the fundraisers. So realistically, we have two, most of all our clients will have two accounts. They'll have a primary and a general. And you would cut the fundraising commission out of the general account for the fundraiser. The credit card processing is a little more complicated because you only get one merchant account. It all has to go into one bank account. But you could fairly easily look at how much was charged on each individual transaction and then move those funds from the general to the primary account. So I don't think it creates a lot of burden at all. To the extent that the commission felt that those individual transactions needed to be reported, it's very easy to report as well, particularly for online contributions where most commercial vendors that I've seen candidates and political committees use track the cost of each individual contribution's fees. So I know, the 4.5% or if it's a fixed fee, or if it's using a merchant platform, the 3% plus whatever Visa or MasterCard is charging, I can fairly easily export a file and see that data. So there's not a lot of difficulty in terms of the accounting side on the committee.
Some people pay it by credit card, some people pay it by check, some people pay through some other means. Are we really talking about the so-called unique situation or just in general?
I think
at that point you might be talking about
to the extent we're talking about
thousands of checks.
Well, to the extent we're talking about individual processing costs, I think it has to be related to the specific individual transaction. So, for example, we encourage our clients who have a lot of volume to use a caging firm, and there's a lot of firms that do this, and they physically open envelopes and process checks and run credit cards, and they actually bill. They bill two ways: they bill flat fees, or they bill per transaction fees, or they can bill hourly. If it's an hourly fee, I don't see how it's reasonably traceable to an individual transaction. If it's a flat fee, I don't see how it's reasonably traceable to an individual transaction. But to the extent that they're saying, you know, hey, these are your primary contribution checks, these are your general election contribution checks, and we charge you 17 cents per check. I'm making this number up, by the way. 17 cents per check deposited. We know exactly how much each one of those checks cost in terms of processing fees. And I think that piece of it should be able to be deducted from any potential refund. And again, I setting aside the legal accounting and compliance cost argument of question one, these uniquely traceable costs, I think, are something that really properly ought to be paid out of those funds. And there's a fun legal argument as to why, actually.
Let's have it.
So, in fact, there's two. The first is it's pretty clear that if a candidate receives a contribution for $2,700 by credit card, the credit card processing cost has to come out of that $2,700. They can't get a $2,700 contribution and a $100 fee on top. So the value of a contribution is the sum of the contribution itself and the processing cost involved in it. And, you know, I'm sure everyone on the receiving side would love to be able to charge the amounts on top, but the law is fairly clear in this, and there's, with the exception that it's miscited in the index of the CFR, and so we can't find the exact statutory site or the regulatory site, but it's pretty clear that any credit card processing on my contributions coming in comes out of the amount that I'm receiving. And so the problem that you then have is I'm going to use rounder numbers just for ease here. $2,500 in the primary, $2,500 in the general is coming at the same time. I'm paying a 5% credit card processing fee on this. It happens to be a flat transaction fee. So this bucket of money here, I have $2,500. The cost of processing that is $125. But I'm not paying it out of here. I'm paying it out of the primary election account. And so the value of this contribution is actually $2,500 plus the $125 at the time that it's made. Now, the fact that it's not necessary, I may not actually get to spend this money, I may not be able to use this money, doesn't change the fact that there's a processing cost involved in it. And so this bucket of money is more than the value that is permissible for the contribution if I'm forced to pay the contribution fees out of this bucket of money. And then there's a slightly more philosophical approach is these are the buckets of allocable speech that I'm allowed to engage in this manner. You know, I'm allowed to have $2,500 of speech related to your general election, $2,500 of speech worth here. I'm reducing the amount of speech that I get in this bucket, which I think matters a little bit more before the primary, in order to subsidize this other bucket of speech. And so I think what ends up happening is, and again, this is a little philosophical, but you're taking permissible amounts of speech that you're allowed to have in the primary, and you're losing that speech. You're not able to engage in that $125 worth of associational speech. And so I think that is part of a philosophical problem with preventing the fees related to the contribution from coming out of the contribution themselves.
Well, I think that's not the one for today, but it seems to me that if you wanted to get that particular, you could direct people to give you money in a certain way where there wouldn't be those fees, or you could find a variety of ways to acquire money without having to pay a professional. But if you're going to do that, then somebody says they're entitled to make a contribution. Part of the expense of the campaign is just what happens in the campaign, you know. Let me ask you this. On your reports at this point, it only shows that there's $57 in the account.
In the primary account, yes.
Okay. Is there any account that shows there's $8,000 there?
There's a...
That's reported to the FEC?
That should be on the reports. There is there's a primary account and there's a general election account. The primary account has $57.16, and the general election account has approximately $8,000 in it. And so it should be on the report as received. It actually might not be because when we cut the checks originally, we would have recorded that disbursement, and we haven't canceled those stale dated checks. So I guess in that sense, those checks are not going to show up on the report. Because we haven't canceled them yet, hoping, you know, some way they'll actually do something with them. So once we cancel those checks, we would then have to reapply those funds back into the FEC report.
Okay, so these have been out, though, for how long, these four checks?
The second round of checks, certainly over a year. They would have been issued prior to the end of 2014.
Okay, so anytime that there's checkout for no matter how long, for a certain length of time, it's never shown as it coming through, or how does it work?
On the FEC report or on the bank report?
Just like this, you know, so if the check comes through, then that's when you show it?
When we cut the check, the refund check, we're reporting it as the date that we're issuing the refund, and so that comes off the cash balance in the report. When we cancel the check, then we're removing that transaction, and so it adds money back into the cash on hand balance. And so the fact that, so technically it's not there, but we also have cash sitting in the bank account as a practical matter, and obviously we have to continue having reporting obligations until this gets resolved.
Okay, that's all I have right now.
Commissioner Goodman.
Yes, Mr. Backert. So you have $57 in your primary account, and you have $8,000 in your general account. General election account.
So that there's a completely unrelated problem where there's a little bit less than $8,000 in that account.
But
essentially there's $8,000 that should be in the general, and there's $5,716 in the primary.
And but for this issue, this committee wants to terminate.
Oh, yes. There's another outstanding debt that we're negotiating with the debtor, and the debtor, of course, keeps pointing out, but you know. What about all this money that you have? Because they're aware of this particular situation.
You mean the creditor?
Yeah, sorry. The creditor is aware that the committee exists, that it's aware of this situation because it's a friendly creditor, but they still want to get paid. And so we're negotiating the resolution of that. So I don't know if we resolve this, it gets us that much closer to getting the committee terminated.
But since you can't resolve this, you're stuck in limbo, I take it.
Yes.
And the committee stays open and has to continue filing reports with the FEC.
Yes.
Has to continue incurring services to do so.
Yes.
Monthly bank fees to do so, right?
Not anymore. But it doesn't. It no longer has monthly bank fees.
But there is an overhead to having file reports.
And it's getting a lot of free legal service out of it.
I was going to say, who's paying for your fees to be here today on how to resolve this $8,000 problem?
Nobody. We just want to get
this
resolved.
You're providing in-kind service to this political committee.
Yes.
Yeah, essentially, right? Okay.
As do a lot of my peers, as it turns out.
And it's all necessitated by FEC regulatory requirements, right?
I would say yes.
So the law said that your committee could raise these general election funds prior to the primary.
Yes.
You have probably had a First Amendment right to do it, too.
Yes.
Probably, right?
I would say so.
Money is speech. I can't prevent you from talking about and supporting a future general election candidacy. So, but the law said you could raise it.
Mm-hmm.
And now the law says... but you can't spend any of it. You got to refund it because mm-hmm. you lost... And yet you're left with all these administrative costs to deal with the money that the law said that you could raise.
Yes. And that exists only because we raised that law.
It's a fairly irrational regulatory result, isn't it?
It is. And interestingly, it creates an odd tension in the law, because for the law to be internally consistent, if contributions include the value of the processing cost, but we're not allowed to, you're getting this resulting contribution additional value onto the general election contribution, you're in essence, it's not internally consistent for the law to say that and then also prevent us from deducting those fees. And so it actually, for the law to be internally consistent, we have to deduct it. And I noticed in draft B, on the various places on part one, or the answer to part 1 where it talks about it, there's actually I don't think there's a clear prohibition on the ability to spend these funds in this way for this particular purpose. I think the purpose of the law is to prevent people from using general election funds to go out and spend money on primary activity. But there's arguably no part of the primary activity that is the transaction processing fee on general election funds. I mean, I think it would be a little bizarre, but nothing technically stops a candidate from raising money just for the general election, even if they have a primary, and raising no primary funds whatsoever.
Right. This is a regulatory catch-22 that we have debated in other contexts. I'll just alert you that I'm in a minority opinion about this, and that's why you are not seeing a yes to your question number one. Mm-hmm. But I believe this regulatory quagmire is a problem, and I've exhorted my colleagues to address it a different way in the past, and I've been unsuccessful. But that's why you're not seeing a yes draft right now on that.
Are there any further questions or discussion? Vice Chairman Walther.
Just a couple of follow-ups. Is this money going to the debtor or to charity?
To the charity.
Okay,
I'm sorry. Any processing fees that we're allowed to separate out, that's going to end up going to the debtor. But that's a relatively while it's important, it's a relatively small amount of money. I think we're looking at, because we've already paid the fundraising fee, we've already paid the credit card processing fee, it's about 15%. So we're looking at, I used to be better at math, about $1,200 that I think would be separated out, and that would go towards the debtor because we have to pay the debtor and then terminate the thing. And then the balance of the debt would be, we're negotiating how to resolve that. But any funds that are the processing fees, those are going straight to the debtor, and the rest of the non-refundable general election contributions are going to some charity.
Okay. One other question. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Commissioner Goodman.
If you were informed that you could terminate this committee today,
mm-hmm.
Okay, would you still want your advisory opinion answered on what you could do with the money with a shut down and terminated committee?
I would want it just because I think it's important to know whether you are or not complying with the law. We have 3-year record keeping requirements even after the committee terminates. We want to be able to document our compliance with the law in case down the road there's an audit. So I think it's important to have an advisory opinion. Even if we are able to terminate, though, I would very happily be thrilled to terminate.
I would encourage you to call Debbie Chacona and talk about your termination options.
Okay.
Any further discussion or questions? At this point, I know that Commissioner Walther, I know that he had several questions that he obviously asked, and there had been some question as to whether or not we might want to vote today or whether or not there would be rather a preference to vote either at a future meeting or even on tally, depending, because I believe that the 60-day deadline runs on Tuesday, next Tuesday.
The 16th after the holiday.
Tuesday the 16th. And so I just want to get my colleagues' preference.
I have no problem with holding it over and voting by tally or whichever way is appropriate.
Vice Chairman, what would your preference be?
That's
okay.
Fine.
I think that the information that you've provided, I think some of my colleagues would like to chew on that. And the question I would ask of you, Mr. Backer, is would we need to get an extension if we were to go beyond Tuesday and consider this and vote in a live meeting like this? We'd need to get an extension,
mm-hmm.
And so I'd guess first ask if you would be willing to grant that extension until the next meeting, or whether if you wouldn't, we could resolve it by tally before Tuesday. But I wanted that is within
my client would be happy to agree to an extension. Certainly, ironically enough, yesterday we filed a notice of a petition for rulemaking about creating time for public comments on draft advisory opinions, and so you have two opinions now. Others might want to comment as well, and okay. If there's any additional information we could provide to help people out based on these questions, I think an extension would be fine.
Okay. So we'll then hold this this matter over for discussion at the next meeting, which will be on the 25th. And so agreeable to hold it until the 25th, then, Mr. Backer, or do you need to first inquire with your client, or can we?
We can go ahead. But the client is. I mentioned that this would be a possibility, so okay. Client's fine with extension.
Okay, thank you very much.
In the hopes of quickly terminating. So.
All righty, Vice Chairman Walther.
Yes, I don't mean the only reason I brought it up is because it was brought up in another context, but in connection with your compensation, have you been compensated at all?
I was paid for by the committee back in when the committee had funds in the primary account, but I've not been compensated for a particularly long time on the matter, and we're not expecting to be compensated from this.
I understand. Thanks.
Unless, of course, the commission agrees with legal, accounting, and compliance costs, which apparently it uniformly does not.
All right. Is there anything further? If not, then we will hold over this discussion until the 25th. Thank you very much, Mr. Backer.
Thank you.